This morning I have the privilege and the honor of welcoming Venerable Roslyn Elm, who is our homilist this morning. We have been addressing Aboriginal issues for quite some time now and felt that this was the important next step. And so we welcome you, Roslyn, and the floor is yours.
May the words of my mouth and the meditation of all of our hearts be right in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Well, I'll say that it's great to be with actual people, flesh and bone. It really is. The last big, gathering was of course on Zoom. And it's been strange getting used to that as well. The one thing I did like on Zoom is that I could wear basketball shorts. But now, of course, here we are together. It's great to be together. Now, I'm sure that you know you're coming back to church with probably a whole new outlook on what gathering is, right? We are so happy to have a good administrator of contact tracing. Everything but my firstborn was listed there. But I assure you that I have a very, very small bubble. This spring and summer has been very difficult. It's been difficult on all of us. Pandemic aside, our country was thrown into a space of mourning. And you know, the thing is that we've experienced this before. We've had these discussions before in the news and in the media with each other in groups. We've heard it. In fact, we've heard it all before. But somehow, and if I may say this, somehow it hit differently this time. It hit differently this time. Not because the media is better at what they do, but because of who we have become since we first heard of the crisis of residential schools in our Indigenous communities. In fact, at that time when we first heard about the crisis of residential schools, we could keep it at arm's length because it was about those communities. It really wasn't about us, because everyone here was not part of those residential schools back in 1830, 1900, and so on. So we could keep it at arm's length. And that was not a problem. I mean this is the way it was in those times. But now it's out there. Because everyone here has children, grandchildren, nieces and nephews, great-grandchildren. And it touches us all in a different way. And I usually come to these organizations and I do the speeches, and you know, it's pretty informational, I guess you could say. But I can't do that now. Things have changed now. Things have changed for me personally, and things have changed for my congregation, my people, my communities. And it's funny. My grandparents went to residential school, but here's the thing is that one set went really close to home at Mount Elgin, just over in Chippewa Muncie there. But uncles and whatnot went to Mohawk Institute. And for whatever reason, my grandmother's sister went to Brandon. And she never came home. Now, they tell us that she had TB, and they were going to send her home, but she never got home. And my grandmother has passed now, so if there are any deeper details, they went with her. But when we heard this story from my grandmother that this is what happened to her sister, this is what happens. This is what happened when indigenous kids went to school. They got sick and they died. And they didn't come home. And it was just a matter of fact. I mean, after all, my grandfather, my grandmother's husband, was killed in Normandy on August 16th, 1944. And he's buried in France. He never came home. So it was normal, I guess, for our family to make sense of that. But after this happened, after those 215 were found, something clicked. A deep sorrow just clicked. It just came over us as a family. My mother, my aunt. We never asked the question why she didn't come home, because we just thought it was normal. Now today, of course, if our child didn't come home from summer camp or hockey camp or even prep school or whatnot or a trip, devastating, and it would stay with you forever. It's so strange, isn't it, when you think of it? It's so strange. And from this 215 and subsequent children found, I started to receive threats. I'm a sellout. Our churches received threats. One was burned. Another had burned previously, so we had a year of two burnt churches. So it's different. So this is why I'm not dressed in my collar. Not because I've denounced my priesthood, but because I couldn't believe that maybe this was the collar was the last thing that those children saw. When they should have seen safety and warmth and love and caring, much as you see when you see your leadership here, warmth and love. And it's not that I'm accusing my brothers and sisters of not having that warmth and love, my colleagues. In fact, I turn to my colleagues. Help us and the communities outside of our churches to understand that this is not who we are. We are not these people of hurt and pain that every day, even in our humanity, we try to be the beacons of light and love and safety. No more can we wear this collar and have people look at it as something of harm. Yes, life has changed for me. And I remember in seminary, wearing the chasuble, wearing the stole, was something that represented my priesthood, and still does. In my home parish, I will still wear my stole. I will still wear the chasuble, because those represent the ontological change that happens when we are ordained. The laying of hands, the call, is something deeper than the symbol of the collar. Yes, things have changed. Things have changed. And things have changed for you as well. Things have changed. And things will change anyway, right? We know this. Things will change anyway. But transformation is something that comes apart from change. What does it mean to be transformed? In our Gospel of Mark, we've been going through the Gospel of Mark and we've been wondering, who is Jesus? And then he's been asking himself, who am I? Who do they say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Me. Right. And we should be, yeah, that's right. We should be asking that same question. Who do I say that I am as a Christian person? Who do I say that I am? What do I represent as a Christian person? When we come to church on Sunday, it's like we've been given like a lunch bag full of food, right? Full of food for the week. Food to help us along our way, because that's what we do as priests and as deacons, is that we walk alongside. So we give food for the week that you may feast on, to give you nourishment, tell you who you are as a Christian person. But Jesus is saying, you know what? Here's the thing. It's really cool that you think that I'm a Messiah. But do you quite understand what it means to be a Messiah? It doesn't mean armor that shines or flags furling in the wind or riding in on a great steed, sword in hand. Not this time. Things have changed. Not this time. We've seen that. We've seen progress. We've seen swords, shining armor. We've seen what it can do. What it can do for only some people. But things have changed. To his disciples, he says, things have changed, and you've been witness to it. The impoverished, the sick, the sinner. This is who we serve, and we will go to our death to serve those that sword and shield do not. This is your heritage as Christian people. This is your identity as Christian people. I remember in a class, the teacher asked, "What makes you indigenous? What makes you indigenous?" And one young man, he held out his status card because that's all he had. Not language. Not culture, not even family. But in our traditional way, we have family. We have language and we have culture. We have our ceremony. We have our medicines. And so do you. So do you. We are experiencing it right here, right now. When Jesus came to inaugurate his kingdom, the kingdom, we were instituted with ceremony, instituted with the good medicine of the Eucharist, instituted with teachers and prophets, instituted with all of those things that would teach us who we are, all of those things that we would need for transformation, not just change, but for transformation. the remembering of who we are as Christian people. And that Christian identity is not just about coming to church on a Sunday and having some prayers and coffee. It's not some place that we go to see our friends, but it's a place that we come to receive the food, the spiritual food, the good medicine, to take us deeper into our faith, that we may have our eyes opened, a condolence of eyes opening and throat cleared, ears to hear, skin seven thicknesses thick, so that we may hear any kind of words as helpful words. This is why we come here. This is our transformation. So when we look at each other as Christian people, we can say, this is who I am. This is what I stand for. Because I'm changed. So I cannot come here and tell you, this is what you need to do to recognize Indigenous reconciliation and to identify reconciliation and identify peace. And just give you information, websites, and books. Instead, I encourage you to have a relationship with each other. Have these conversations with each other. And none of you have to be right. It's not about being right. It's about being on this trajectory, on this journey of discovery of who you are as a Christian person and the costliness of it, the sacrifice of it, because we can't do it by ourselves. I can't tell you that this is what we need. We need more resources and more money as Indigenous people. But we need to have thought put into whatever it is that is going to be received or to be given. No more arenas to communities with ice 8 months out of the year. But instead, care for children and care for neonatal services in that community. But what that requires is relationship. What that requires is transformation. Now, the election is coming up. I can't tell you who to vote for. Some of us have been said, well, I've been liberal all of my life, and I'm not changing, even though I've been conservative all of my life. NDP, that's just craziness. That's just craziness. Right? I mean, these are the kind of the things, sometimes these are the things that we talk about, right? But read. Ask the question. Why is it that there are no clean water in our community? Why is it that I have to boil water? I bought a bottle of water and I have two more in my car. Because that's the water that I can drink. It's the water I have to brush my teeth with. Right? It was funny because, you know, I thought, well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to buy a new refrigerator. And I want one of those refrigerators that make ice cubes. I was excited about that. Oh, wait. I can't drink my water. Wait. So think about who you're going to vote for. I can't tell you who you're going to vote for. But read, ask the questions, and see what is most conducive to your identity as a Christian person, whatever that is. Because that counts. Participating in those that lead counts. So Jesus is going to go to his death. Ask the question of who Jesus is. Who am I? Who are you? And then this is what it means to be the Messiah. Finally, he makes that final walk, that triumphal entry, not by a giant steed with armor and helmets and shininess that comes in from the other end, but no, on a little donkey. What does that mean? Which one are you? Are you coming in on a little donkey? Are you coming in on a big steed? It's hard to figure out that. It's hard to figure out sometimes. And I'm not calling judgment on it because it is hard. Because we do want progress. We do want to better our lives and better ourselves. So no, there is no judgment in that. But there's more. This place offers more. You offer more to each other. Because you've changed. You've changed. You've been transformed at your baptism. And every time you renew your baptism, every time you take the good medicine, you change a little bit more. Let that change count. Not just for yourselves, but for each other. And for the people who are so weak now that cannot hold that hope for themselves, you hold it for them because that's who you are. And I hate to say it like that, like telling you who you are. I hate to be forceful in that, but I believe in you. I do. This summer, I've been able to take part in Sacred Circle, which is the gathering of indigenous Christians, Anglicans, across Canada. And as I listened to them speak, I realized that here in the Diocese of Huron, we're a little different. And it's the first time I think I really ever thought that way, is that we actually were very fortunate that we are moving along this trajectory of kingdom, especially when it comes to our indigenous people. My mother before me, and my mother and my father, who used to do exactly the same thing I'm doing now, did the prodding. And there were times when my mother was completely ignored. But she did the prodding. So my father too. And now here I am to say, prodding no more. Prodding no more. You are who you say you are. You are who you say you are. And you've done great things so far. They deserve recognition. You've done great things. You are transforming. You have changed. This diocese has changed. This diocese has changed, and it's not because of me, because of you. Sitting here this morning, I don't have anything grand to say to you. I want to take questions, but there will be time for that. But instead, I want to bring a message of hope. A message of transformation. A message of believing in you. Believing in that good medicine. Believing in the spiritual food that your leadership gives you every week. That you might come to see transformation of your community, of your city, and finally of Canada.